Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to another Rahalastapa. I'm joined by the fantastic Joe Trescini. I did it again. And Joe is going to be talking about his fabulous book, 10 Things I Hate About Me, which sounds like a negative title. And in some ways, I suppose, there is an element of that. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well indeed. I will say right at the top of this one that we are probably going to be discussing some subjects that some people may be triggered by. But there's some mental illness and some suicide discussions probably within this. So if that's going to upset you, then don't listen. But equally, I would say... Equally, I'd say it's really good to talk about these things. If you and the book is fantastic for that, so I hope people will stay to listen.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, I find that just if it doesn't matter how dark the subject, if I smile while I'm saying it, it's a bit of that gets away with it. So that's what I'll do now.
Well, you know, it's a huge subject, and it's a very honest book. It still is funny. Some people won't like the fact that you're being funny about a serious subject, but hopefully most people listening to this will like the fact that it'll be funny about a serious subject. But I think it's it's the honest thing. It takes some dark places throughout your life. Tell us what do you see the book as and maybe where it came from. I mean, that's a very big question, but let's start off with it.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I'll take that. The reason that it's there, I think being funny about serious stuff is the most important thing anybody could ever learn and do. Yeah. And that, I think that to approach any conversation that matters without humour is like trying to paint a picture using half of the colours. You can do it, but you can't. It's going to be shit. Yeah. And I've always found that there's a reason why all of the best villains in history are funny. And it's because you can't laugh at somebody you don't like. And if you laugh at somebody, It means that you trust them and they make you feel calm. And laughing releases loads of good shit. So you're going to listen to whatever the person who just made you laugh said, because they might say something that makes you laugh again. And that felt nice. So the best time to give somebody a piece of information that matters is between laughs. And I've learned that over the years in just sort of growing up around stand-ups, loving understanding. Well, unfortunately, I don't laugh enough. I'm sure you're the same, Richard, is that you don't really laugh at stuff anymore. You just go, yeah, that's funny, and I know why, and then you move on.
A little bit. I think maybe you get a bit older and you start to laugh again, I think. I mean, I love comedy, and I completely agree with you about the importance. I mean, it's important to talk about all of these subjects, and what's remarkable about this book, I think, is the honesty with which you talk about it. You're very open, but yes, the comedy makes you very likable, and I think you're a very likable person. You shouldn't have 10 things you hate about yourself, but I understand that's not really your choice. I understand.
No, and you're not the first person to say that, and I'm reliably informed that is the general consensus. I am the only one of me that's not a fan, and that, like, whenever I talk about this people are very kind. But it's something that I've learned as well, is the fact that I lived under my problems for so many years, and I realised that. But there were so many people that told me that I was the opposite of what I thought, that I became the exception. And so I stopped treating the fact that I don't like me as news, because every night I went to sleep and I thought, I hope I wake up tomorrow and feel better. And I never did. Mm-hmm. So I started to expect the fact I'd feel like shit. And as soon as I expected it, that then gave me a foundation that I was able to build some sort of life upon. So that's why I'm talking about this shit as well. To answer your earlier question for about 8 minutes ago, the reason the book exists is so that I can just let everybody know, listen, I'm not a big fan of me. So as soon as we both know that, we can all move on as a unit, because society has no way of hearing somebody say that they don't like themselves without trying to make them better with words. And words don't help. Yeah. So that's why the book exists, because I don't need anybody else's opinion on what's happening in my head. I just need somebody else to read it, understand it, and then we can move on as a team.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think you saying that, though, I think to some degree, most people feel something like that. Most people aren't super confident about themselves. Most people are very insecure about themselves. I think the great thing about this book is, whether you're going through anything even remotely similar or very similar, or even if it's something that doesn't affect you at all, you should read it, because it will help you through your own issues. But equally, if you don't have those issues, it's extremely important, I think, to try and understand what someone who's got the same kind of conditions as you is going through, because I think it's very easy to make judgments that are wrong. Right.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, like, the borderline personality disorder is the thing that I've got. Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've learned about it is the fact that all of the symptoms of it, there are nine, they're all shit. But they are also symptoms of just humans being awake. And I have realised that just the things that I deal with on a day-to-day basis are the same as everybody else. Mine feels a lot worse, and, you know, unfortunately, because being suicidal is one of the bigger things that in the way that I feel my personality disorder. But people can relate to all of the shit stuff that I feel, and I think that that's something that's felt quite nice. Over the past couple of years in sort of talking about this shite, that I've learned that even though the way that I feel things is wrong, it's actually very, very common. And suicide is such a – still, people need to start talking about suicide in a different way, especially at the moment with what's happening, because the reason that people are killing themselves is changing. And I was not a fan of being alive in the old world. This was not coming to a new world was not a plan for me. I did not want to do that, but I am here, and I am coping with the fact that I want to die. It's a symptom. It is a thing, and the only reason I've not died in the past 3 years, Richard, is because I have been thinking about killing myself for 10 years, and I haven't. So I have been practicing being, and I am not good at a lot, but. as you can see, I am quite good at not killing myself.
Yeah, that's
But that's the thing, is it's so weird that there's not a there's no dialogue. No one's been told how to respond to suicide, even without jokes and stuff like that. The only conversations we have about them are at funerals, and that's too late.
Yeah.
I thought after so many years of speaking about it like this that it might catch on, but it really hasn't. It's still just sort of, it's still just me doing this. All of the talking and the writing and stuff that I do, it's exclusively to help me. I keep being told from people that have read the book that it helps other people, and that's nice. But it's certainly not why it exists in the first place. It exists so that I don't die.
Yeah, well, that's a very good reason for it to exist. I always say, regardless, my belief is writing and expressing yourself is so important, whatever you're going through. And even if you're relatively happy and this stuff doesn't touch you at all, if you can write stuff just for yourself, that will help you. If you can get, if you can find a publisher or publish it, if you're writing something exceptionally good or whatever, then great, it gets out there and helps other people as well. But I think that anyone writing should be writing primarily for themselves, and especially about something like this. If you're, just doing a diary or just keeping a handle on yourself, writing can be an incredible force. And it is. It's great that you put this out into the world, Joe, because I think people will on some degree understand little bits of it. And if they don't understand or have hadn't experienced bits of it, they will go, okay, I think like there's a point where you talk about people thinking you're like putting stuff on. I mean, obviously you've done a lot on social media, which is lots of fun and has again raised lots of awareness. But as always, I mean, and the people on social media will never be, I think for any comedian, but especially you, will never be as harsh as you are inside anyway. So they're in a hiding to nothing anyway. You've got your own social media going on inside your head, which is much worse than anything they can do. But hopefully it'll make them understand that, this isn't an act. This isn't put on. This isn't you trying to get attention. This is you, I think it's very clear from the online stuff that it's you trying to stay alive and just trying to express and explain what this sort of experience is for you.
Mental illness is not an opinion, so it's not something that should at any point be debated or anything. I know that what I experience is real, but I also understand that it's not real because these things are happening in my head, and I know that that doesn't mean it's tangible, but it's fucking happening. And I've always been at odds with that. I've never ever enjoyed the fact that there is something. If you can't see something, it can be denied. That's the problem with mental health problems and mental illness problems. Two very different things. Mental health problems are bad and not nice, but they're also not mental illness. So I've always felt that, like, gratitude lists and stuff like that. My ex-girlfriend years ago, she was great, and we got on sometimes. But she used to buy me self-help books, and we'd do gratitude lists in the morning. And then I'd write lists, and it would just be awful, and I'd hate it. I'd feel worse.
Yeah.
And it's because that's a mental health solution. Trying to fix my brain by writing a gratitude list is like trying to remove a tumor with a fucking spoon. It's not going to happen. And I've forgotten your question, but
no, it doesn't matter. Well, tell us a little bit about you've sort of named. You basically have a voice in your head that is criticizing you to them and encouraging you to take your life and telling you you're worthless, which you've named. Do you want to tell Mick. Us a little bit about Mick? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's have you you've read The Chimp Paradox? You've
read, I haven't. Read I haven't. Paradox. I haven't read that book. Yeah. I do know you mentioned that. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither have I. I've not read it. But I'm aware that it's about the bad things that you think in your head. If you imagine a monkey, you put the bad thoughts into the monkey. You can put the monkey somewhere else, and that's essentially what I've done. The way that I look at it. Of the nine sort of symptoms of BPD are the things that are ruining my life. So 90% of my thoughts are from somebody that doesn't like me very much. But there is 10% of my thoughts that's mine. unfortunately, because I think so many awful things out of those nine symptoms, the 10th thing, me, I become somebody that hates himself. But I hate me, and that's a symptom of the symptoms. If I didn't think all of the awful things, I'd probably quite like me, but I don't. Do you remember DVDs? You
yes.
Had to. Of course you remember DVDs. What ridiculous question.
I'm very old.
The director's commentary.
Yeah, you
don't look it. There was the director's commentary. Basically, what living with this is like for me is that the director is watching a film and he hates the film. It's the worst thing he's ever done. And he has to watch it over and over again every day on a loop forever. And that's it. And I've not got chat happening in my head. I've not got anything else going on. These are just my thoughts. And I'm watching my own life and I hate it. Yeah. And but I'm aware that it's the only one I'm going to get. So I've tried loads of ways to, you know, stop feeling like this. I used to do shit that I thought was the reason for it. I used to be off me nut. I was all of the drugs and the drink in the world were the reasons that I did this. And they told me if I stopped those things, I'd be all right. And I stopped them and I got worse. So thankfully, I managed to get through that to the point that, you know, where I exist now. And that's what I do. That's why I keep going on about this. I wish there was an easier way of dealing with this, because it's not easy. It's not fun. But I'm here.
Of course, Joe, and it's terrific. You know, it's really great that you're putting this through, and it's really great you're here, and do stay here, and I know you will. But I think the director's commentary thing I thought was a very good way of describing. I've experienced this on a tiny, tiny level, and you know, I'm not going to compare it to you, but if I'm long way into a tour and I know my show very, very well, when I'm on stage, sometimes it's, you know, automatic pilot. And then I get a very distinct voice in my head saying, what if you forget how to talk now? What, you know, what if you forget how to breathe? And it's trying to, this voice in my head, that's me, is trying to fuck me up. But it only happens to me, you know, it happens to me once in a blue moon, right? And it's nothing at all like what you're doing. But it's such, even that is such a weird thing to experience, that you know that that's you. And why the hell are you trying to destroy yourself and sabotage yourself in that way, and kill yourself possibly if you actually do forget how to breathe. So, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. But you've done something there, Richard, is something that is very human and is very common, which is you've belittled your own suffering, which is you've said a thing that bothers you for a period of time, as you said, a smaller period of time, which you wouldn't compare to mine. You can compare that to mine, just because you're experiencing something that you feel might be smaller and for a longer period of time. It doesn't mean that you're any better or worse than I am. All our lives are our lives. That the worst thing, it's such a human thing to be like, well, you know, somebody else has got it worse. Well, I know that. Of course they've got it worse. But I'm me now and it's shit.
Yeah.
And like it's one, I think that's the thing. It's so ingrained in humans to just get through and be and to look at yourself and be able to cope with a problem by going, it could be worse. Well, yeah, but if I keep thinking it could be worse, I've got even less to live for.
Yeah.
So I just see what's in front of me as an issue. I deal with that as we go along.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
It does. It does, Joe. And you're terrific at explaining all this stuff. And you know, I think again, I would direct people to the book because it really does get you into all this. And I think, you know, most of us, I think even people who we look at, what one looks at and think, oh, they've got their lives together and you know, they're popular and they're cool and they know what the right things to do in social situations. I think for most comedians, we've been the guy who's been bullied, or we're the guy who's been a bit socially awkward, you know, and doesn't know what to do. I think obviously for you, I mean, your life is, you know, I'm sure that you're a bad person for this to happen to, because your life was right from the beginning. Was you know, your dad's a very famous comedian, Joe Pasquale, and you grew up straight into the showbiz lifestyle, which you know, includes, or, you know, as you get a little bit older, includes all the stuff that you say people were saying you shouldn't be doing. It includes all of those those dangerous and mind destroying things.
I mean, you know, as comics, there is a reason that our job is standing on our own.
Yeah.
And I've always been aware of that. I was aware of that from being three, from watching Dad work, and just from watching, from loving comedy and getting so much of my everything from it. I have always been able to sort of get through by understanding that being alone is something that could be rewarded. And I always felt that from my dad and from other comics and things like that. But I think when you grow up on the side of the stage, you can't see the audience. You just see whoever's out there. So there was something ingrained in me of being able to learn from watching stand up. But then it wasn't until then when I started to do it myself, I understood it. But I then only was able to function emotionally and physically if I was being watched. Yeah. I stopped seeing anything. There was no beginning or end to who I was. There was no me. I had no me. And I didn't get a me until I was 25. And it turns out that I was an arsehole. But I think that it's one of those things that I'm glad that I can cope with it in a way, in dealing with it in a way that isn't just being suffocated by it.
We know it was a tough time for you as a kid, but I wonder, you know, but you also, I think, as a showbiz kid, and this might have been part of it, or money, you know, it's very difficult to know cause and effect, isn't it? And what, you know, where the circle begins. But you're hanging around with lots of adults. You're hanging around with lots of very, you know, outgoing adults, and you sort of got on better with the adults than you didn't really understand kids. Didn't like kids.
No, didn't like them, didn't understand them. It wasn't, I think I would have been like, I was open to suggestion, but because I'd spent more time with adults, I had no friends, even like at such a young age. So the only sort of frame of reference I had for what children were giving to the world was they just made the big people talk different. So I didn't understand why, because I knew what being patronised felt like before I knew that patronized was a word, and for that reason I didn't trust children, because I then was like, there's something going on here, I don't know what it is, but you're saying stuff and they're being different, so this is weird. And it took me such a long time to find a place that fitted, which is why drugs and shit like that fed my inherent lack of emotional stability that was bred out of having no friends growing up. Because, again, my experience of being alone in my bedroom for God knows how many years, filming myself, having the shit kicked out of me at school, then going home, setting up a camera, filming myself being arsed for 3 hours, having a laugh, then watching it back, going to sleep and doing it again. That's what I understood. My life had never been anything else. And unfortunately, I never realised, I did that until I was about 13, 14. And I didn't know I was lonely. I didn't know it's only now that I look back and go, oh shit, you were not happy. The first time I ever went to a psychiatrist, he was a treat. Fuck, his name was Derry. And he looked like he'd drawn his hair on with a Sharpie. And he asked me the first thing on our assessment, he said, what do you want out of therapy? And I said, I don't want you to tell me I had a bad childhood, because I didn't. It turns out fucking did. I did. That's how, again, in me, I was so, my reality was so distorted that I didn't really understand what had happened, what was going to happen, and where I was. I just had to start again from where I was.
I think it's so hard as kid, you know, as a kid who's different, and as a kid who doesn't necessarily understand, you know, that implicitly the way that like social interaction works, or is confused by it, or is thinking, you know, I remember feeling not exactly the same things, but you know, I was questioning everything from a very young age, and why things worked, and why you had to behave in a certain way. And if your brain works like that in any degree, then you know, that's, you're going to be a little bit ostracized, because you're not trying, you know, you're sort of, you're already sort of pulling apart the fabric of society, going, why does this work like this? Why does it matter?
Yeah.
Why, you know, so it's, I can understand the kids would maybe have, you remember the kids at school who were, you know, who were pushed away as well. And then you push back and you're both pushing each other away. So it's,
And also, like, I wasn't even, when I was growing up, I was a magician. And like being a magician now, with knowing that the personality disorder I've got, is being a magician is a very, very specific type of lying.
Yeah.
And it's a lying that one, you and the person watching the magic have an unspoken agreement that you both know what's going to happen isn't real. But also with magic tricks, there is an understanding that it doesn't matter how much I lie or how wrong it goes, no harm is going to come to anybody because it's a trick. Yeah. So from a very, very young age, my understanding of lying is that it was fucking essential.
Yeah.
And that didn't help. That didn't help. Because, again, that's how I saw the world. I only saw a connection with other people happening with something else between us, be that lights or a deck of cards or something.
Yeah.
Without that something that is in the middle of us, I had no idea what to do with that time. I'm still not sure. And I don't think it's an accident that the most successful thing I ever did a couple of years ago was me being on my own making stupid videos, because that's what I've been doing for the past 30 years.
Yeah.
So it's nice that it actually paid off at some point, because it wasn't looking good.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, you know, it's such a sad book and such a moving book. But as with all these things, you know, I was talking to Annika Rice the other day about her parents having Alzheimer's disease, which is obviously very tragic. But there's loads of laughs in it and funny stuff in it, and there's sort of dark humor in it. I mean, like, as a kid, you basically were trying to get off school by pretending to have a stomachache. Do you want to tell us about how far that
yeah, stomachache went? I love being asked about this. Yes, I do. My mum hates it. Yeah, I that last day of the summer holidays when I was in year 10. I was putting on stomachache. That was a regular thing because it had been a regular thing. I was having to up it on a regular basis. I didn't want to go to school. So I told mum about the stomachache at about 8:30 in the morning. She was like, yeah, of course you do. I'm sure you'll be fine. And I kept upping it throughout the day to the point where she's like, well, if it's really that bad, you should take your trousers off. So I was like, okay, I'll take my trousers off. So I really committed, and I was unaware of the fact that when we got to the doctors, I'd faked the symptoms of ruptured appendix. Like, I'd nailed it, absolutely nailed it. So Dr. Story said, you need to go to hospital. And so I, at that point, I went and had them out. And my mum still now will not have that was a lie. She won't have it. I've got a scar. It was great. I only wanted a day off and I had 6 weeks. It was bloody brilliant.
But I mean, you know, it's terrible. It's still
it's still
kind of funny. It's still kind of funny, but also, and it's funny and then, I shouldn't be laughing at this.
No, that's the thing. The thing is I learned that it's like going to the first time I ever went to a casino, I won £800. And that was the worst thing that could ever happen. The worst thing that can happen from the first time you do something potentially self-destructive is for it to go well.
Yeah.
And having my appendix out and going to a casino, both were very positive outcomes, which is why I then thought, oh, good, this is a good road to go down. Yeah. And none of them ever were. I've still not found a good road.
No, but, you know, I don't think that's unusual, though. And, you're still a young man and you know, life is so confusing for everyone. And I think that's not, you know, it does take time. And even then, you know, you get to 55 and think you found your road and go, oh, God, what if I'm on the wrong road? Life is really, really confusing. So if you've got a disorder that does all this extra stuff to you, it's just, you know, it's such a terrible thing to have to negotiate. But I think, you know, but in the end, as you say, in the end, these things, obviously the videos you did, especially with the wearing the child's tutu, what's it called? Child's little...
Leotard.
Leotard, that's the word. And dancing around and doing strange made up dance moves. I mean, these things went ballistic, really, didn't they?
Absolutely mental. Yeah, yeah. And also, not least, because I'd only been with my girlfriend for a month and I'd just gone up to Hull to meet her mum and dad for the first time in the country lockdown, and I was there for four bloody months and they were amazing. I think anything I've ever done that wasn't shit has been an accident, in a sense. It's still been me doing it, but it's just been that was sincere. That's not an accident. Everything I've ever done has gone well with the sincere things that I've done in my life.
Yeah.
I never got anywhere when I was trying too hard. And I think the best thing that I did, and I'm very lucky that I started to do this for a couple of years before everything shut down, is the fact that I started to try and find a reason for getting up in the morning that wasn't having somewhere to be. And I still struggle with it, but I've been putting some legwork into finding what that is. And I'm very fortunate for that, because that's one thing that I've really, really learned recently, is that I have to know what to do when I'm awake. And that sounds so simple, but it's because I never, ever do. And if I leave myself being awake alone for too long, I'll only ever have one idea. So I try not to try too hard.
Yeah, but you know, again, it's finding you, it's negotiating your way through and finding your way through. And the book is, you're very, very honest about the kind of the bad times. I'm sort of interested that you pretty much reject, you would go to rehab. I mean, you took a lot of drug, a lot of cocaine, even by showbiz terms, like a huge amount of cocaine, which I think a lot of young actors do, because, as you say in the book, a lot of young actors, at a time where their brain is malleable, they're suddenly given a load of money, they don't really have any expenses, and they can spend all of this money on drugs and partying if they want to. So it's quite a common thing, I think.
Yeah.
But even by that standard,
absolutely.
Even by that standard, I think you were kind of excessive.
Absolutely, and that's a funny thing with time and humans and things like that is. That is a rite of passage, and some people do, some people don't. But I was the last person to find out that I had a problem, and I particularly when it was at its worst, sort of the drugs, is that the people that I was around started to stop, and then they started to, you know, I don't know, find relationships or, you know, not sleep in their own piss. And that's when I realized that I was alone, and it was too late and I couldn't stop it. So I think that, yes, it is. I still remember friends of mine that we'd go out, you know, for a night, and they'd have a couple of lines and then they'd go to bed and then they'd wake up at 9:30 and they'd, you know, make food. And I'd still be, you know, in a stress position in the corner of their house at scratching my head, just praying for death. I still now know that that's not in me to be able to do stuff like that a bit. It took so many years for me to work out that I was not a better person on drugs or drinking. To be honest, like now, there is part of me that I look at drinking and things and think, oh, I wish that I could have a drink or go to the pub. But that's a lie. That's a lie, because then it's my brain telling me that was ever an option. I never went to didn't go to a pub to talk to people and have a drink. That's not a thing. I've got no frame of reference for what that feels like. It is a rite of passage, but I, as always, took it too fucking far.
Yeah, But, you know, I think a lot of people do. And you see the damage in lots of different ways down the road. And I think especially for those young actors, you know, you'll meet them when they're in their 30s and 40s and they've taken too much coke and something is switched in their heads. And you can't actually completely go back, you know. And I know you can go away from it and you can move away from it, but you can't sometimes repair the damage that those things do.
No, God, no. No, and again, that's something else that, you know, I've realised all these years later is people thought I was going to die. The only reason they didn't talk to me about it is because they thought I knew.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I was just sort of just pottering around doing what I was doing, not being... And it was because I kept it a secret for so many years. I somehow managed to keep it quiet. And then there was one flat that I moved into with a friend of mine, and... the first night that we were there, he said that it was our front room was a room of no judgment. He said, you can do whatever you want in here and nobody will ever know and nobody will ever care. And that was the worst thing to tell somebody that was holding down Satan.
Yeah.
Well, and I, yeah.
You know, I mean, you feel things so intensely, Joe. It's clear, you know, both positive and negative. You're a very emotive and emotional person, which is a great thing. But also you're in this industry that, I mean, I feel, you know, you write about having a fear of abandonment, but then you're in an industry where you get these incredibly intense relationships with the people you're working with. And then that just stops. So you're like, you're basically almost in love, almost in a relationship with everyone you're working with. And then they all fuck off and you fuck off and you maybe never see
them again. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I swear, Richard, I've never, ever thought about that. I have never thought about that. That is so true. There has not been a single person that I've ever been in a relationship with at work that I haven't been in love with.
Yeah.
That is, I've never, ever thought about that. It's so true. Yeah. Because it doesn't feed into the best parts of my head. Because no. That as a job is mental. What we do is mental.
It is.
Yeah, that's good. I'm going to write that down because that's made me feel better about at least 4 years. So thank you for that.
Well, good. Look, you know, I think what's great about this book is it's still a journey all the way through. You're kind of going into rehab and you think, oh, maybe he's sorted out this time. And then, you know, and then it hasn't. And I know it's always going to be an ongoing journey, and it's an ongoing journey that where there'll be slip ups and there'll be mistakes. And, you know, but it does feel like you've reached at least a staging post where things are hopefully not going to slip too far backwards.
Yeah, this is it. This is this whole, the reason it's lovely that I think you're amazing. I'm so happy when you got in touch to know that you were reading the book. Well, that's a bit shit that you'd read the book because obviously, but I was so pleased you got in touch and it's been so nice to be able to get... My plan worked. My plan was and continues to be to just keep telling as many people as I can that I'm not all right because I tried all of the things and I'm just never all right. So that I'm happy to talk about it. I don't care. I have to be defined by the personality disorder to some degree because it's 90% of me. Mm-hmm. But this is the safest that I get is talking to somebody else about it and having a laugh. And I'm so glad that you took the time to read it and want to talk to us about it because I think you're great.
Well, thank you, Joe. But I'm very glad.
I'm winding down. Like, no, I've not got to go anywhere. I've got nothing to do.
No, I'm very glad. No, I'm glad I read it too. I actually, I've got about three copies of it now because I bought it and then one turned up that you sent me anyway. And then I think I've got another one as well. So I'll send one out to someone else. I'll send one out to a listener because I think, you know, but also you do have like an incredible amount of people have read this and a lot of very famous. You've got a lot of very good quotes from people. So Dawn French, was one of the first people to read that. So that's a good first read.
Yeah. Absolutely, which was lovely. Because again, I don't know Dawn French. I've really? Never met Dawn French. That's still now. No, never. But she sent me a nice message. And then she sent me another one. She read it in 2 days before, while she was doing, she was rehearsing for, she was writing the new tour. Yeah. And she paused it for 2 days to read the book. And It's stuff like that that you just think, shit. Like when I was 10, my birthday present was a tent. I'd asked for a tent and I lived in a tent in my mum's garden for 3 months. And she gave me, I got a Nokia 3210 as well, which I thought was a positive. But it turns out because mum wasn't a big fan of parenting, she basically put the phone in the tent so that I could then be in the tent with the phone and she wouldn't have to do much. Right. And I took a telly and a VHS out there and I watched The Vicar of Dibley on a loop for 3 months. So the fact that now... I was able to contact her and this happened. It was a lovely, I mean, very depressing circle, but it was lovely that I got round it.
Yeah. And you're such a force of nature. And I think that's it. You're so, you know, the thing is, it's such a disconnect between the way you are inside and outside, because I think that's people see you, they identify with you, they like you. You're a very funny and likable person. So I think that's the fact that Dawn doesn't know you at all and they're still giving you these lovely quotes and done that is a fantastic thing. But it's the honesty of it, I suppose. And, you know, everyone will identify to some degree with this book, even though it won't be
the most difficult thing to do is be honest, especially if you've lied.
Yeah.
And I lied for years and years and years, but and now, especially with everything that's happening everywhere, it's just being honest is the only way that I know that I can go to sleep at the end of the day and I've done everything that I can to at least be all right with hanging about, poor choice of words. But it's one of those things that I'm worse than ever. My brain is worse than it's ever been. Yeah. And because this whole, all of it is shaken up the way that I see the world and the way that I interact with things. And I was not doing that positively to begin with. But this is the only way that I've got to get through it, which is just talking about it and not lying about shit anymore.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting, but it's better than being an arsehole.
It is. It is. And everyone's an arsehole, and especially in show business, anyone who goes through if anyone goes through fame early and gets the money and the drugs and everything else that comes with it, many, many people are arseholes. I listened to the audiobook, actually, is how I did ingest this. And it's a very, again, it's a very emotional performance. There's a couple of moments where it's difficult for you to carry on, which is great for you to leave in as well, I think. I think it's obviously some of these things have really, really affected you and some of these things still haunt you. And I guess that it's going to be difficult for that not to be the case, but you have to be able to at least attempt. Are you able to forgive yourself for those, for the lies and for the, I know you stole some money and, you know, because if you've atoned for it and you've apologized for it, you should be able to hopefully move on a little bit.
Yeah, I think it comes a point that, you know, I'm pretty sure there are three worst things that I've ever done. And as I've gone through my life, I've never, ever let them go. And I think that it comes, you know, and that's what people say. And they say, well, you should let that go at some point. But I've done some awful stuff. And there's a big part of me that doesn't feel like I deserve to let things go as a reminder of the things that I'm capable of. If I don't stay aware of the fact that I'm a bit broken.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I know that the worst things that I've ever done could kill me. I've not done a worst thing that I've ever done for 5 years now. Yeah. And I'm not asking for a medal for that, but there's been enough time for me to go, okay, I'm probably the only one thinking about these things. They could still kill me because my brain is so manipulative. It used to manipulate other people, but now I don't let it out. It still manipulates me. It's not changed. It's just I don't let him out my mouth.
Yeah.
And I realized that it was still the biggest thing that my brain could do was to remind me of the worst. And you said there, I stole money. I did. The reason I put it in the book is so that I can say what I've got to say now, which is I took £30,000 off of a friend over a small period of time. That is something that I am desperately not proud of, and I absolutely hate saying it. But there is a reason I put it in the book, and it is because I don't deserve to die for something that I did then. It was an awful thing to do. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't have a personality disorder, but they're still my hands. I've always known right from wrong. And at what point do I not, I haven't got to move on from it. I accept what it was. It was my fault. I don't deserve to die because of it now. So really, that's it. And I'm aware that everybody else has got a worse thing they've ever done. I will never know what those things are.
Yeah.
But I know that I've stopped doing awful things. I used to do 7 a week. I've not done one for 5 years, which is great. So that means that I at least deserve to be able to try to let it go. So the reason I put it in the book is so that it's a thing that I can pick up, and I've picked it up and I can give it to you and you can do what you like with it. But I have to be accountable for the things that I've done, which is why I why it's there, so that I can move on from it as much as I can.
Yeah. Well, that's I think also, you know, because lying is, you know, when you meet somebody who lies to you, it's such a weird thing to go through as the person who's been lied to. And what I really like about this book as well is it made me think, oh, hold on, that person who was just an habitual liar, who I caught in a lie that unraveled everything. I've been in relationships with people who've lied to me, and I've been in, you know, you have friends who just weirdly are lying. You suddenly go, oh God, you know, maybe it's, you know, they weren't bad people necessarily. Maybe they had a personality disorder. Maybe they were probably going through something, you know. And I think it's very easy for us as human beings to live our lives and think we're the center of everything, and then someone comes in and they're bad or they're evil or they're against us. But often they're battling with their own thing. And I think that's what really, because, you know, you're a nice guy, right? And the fact that you care about this stuff, there are people who would do bad things and not give a fuck about it and not have any regret. You're a nice guy.
This is the but this is the thing that with borderline personality disorder as well, is it's very, very common as a because of the way that it is, that it's given to evil people. Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, this doesn't help me. All of them, John Wayne Gacy, all of these people, if they've gone in and they killed a lot of people, the second time they get a trial, BPD comes up. Right. That doesn't help at all. Because if anything, there is no psychosis sort of within the empathy and stuff like that. I am full of empathy. I feel awful about stuff all the time.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the evil people with BPD are generally the loudest.
Yeah.
And there are God knows how many of people, you know, like me that have got it. That, you know, I don't want to kill people. The only people I want to kill is me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course.
And I'm not gonna.
No. Good. And that's, good.
Yeah.
Good. But good. But also, you know, we should all of us should think a little bit about that, because it's, you know, the problem with mental illness and mental health is it is, as you say, this hidden thing. And so there's no way of knowing. And some people are just dicks. That's the, you know, it's not, you can't excuse everything. Some people are dicks. Some people are selfish. Some people just want to have their own way. So it's a complicated thing, but it should make you, should make you think about how one interacts. And, you know, with this, the fact that people didn't know, you know, that you were killing yourself, taking drugs, and people weren't really intervening, that you were being left alone to work that out for yourself.
You
know, eventually, thankfully, everything was worked out, but it's you know, it's keeping our eyes open, I think, to everything.
Yeah, of course. And like you just said about sort of looking at people in your life over your life that have lied to you, I had a few texts from friends that explained after reading the book, they were like, oh shit, I understand now, because I thought you were just a wanker.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh shit, it's so weird, because you forget about all of the various different people's lives that you touch in a really negative way throughout stuff.
Yeah.
It's been interesting to get that feedback.
Yes, that's good. Yeah. And I'm sure if we all examined our lives, we would, you know, you will, that hopefully more good than bad, but you will impact on other people's lives anyway through sometimes you will act selfishly, or just sometimes you will act do something that isn't in someone else's interest, or you'll be drunk, or you'll be, you know, whatever, or you'll be on drugs or wherever you are, and you don't know exactly what you're doing. And so we all have to accept this is a part of all of us. We all have things that we have to, you know, deal with in our lives and think back on and go, did I do the right thing there? Why, you know, I wish I could take it back. But that is also part of learning, and that is part of moving on. Look, Joe, I could talk to you about this forever, and maybe I will, but it's a big recommend. I think it's one of those books that you really want as many people as possible to read, just because I think it's not some bits of it are not easy to get through, some bits of it are not funny, but much of it is funny, and I think the overall journey that we're going through, I think is a very important one to tell. So thank you for writing it. Thank you to
Thank you for taking the time to give a shit about it. Thank you, mate. I really, really, really means a lot to me, Richard. I think you're brilliant. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. Well, look, thank you so much, Joe, for joining us. Do buy Joe's book, 10 Things I Hate About Me. And, you know, as I say, good if you're going through something similar, good if you're not going through something similar. So do buy it. Thank you to Chris Evans, not that one, for his production work on this. And thank you, Joe, for joining us. See you again.
Thank you for having me, Richard. Bye, mate.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.